ready to keep you company wherever you are. Carte Blanche, the podcast, brings you immersive, hard-hitting stories anytime, anywhere, every week.
The first sitting of South Africa's 7th Parliament happened on Friday, and there's a lot to unwrap in this week's installment of The Whole Week Wrap with Daily Maverick and Carte Blanche. Joining us to make sense of the ongoing negotiations is Daily Maverick's senior political journalist, Queenen Maswabi. Here's what's coming your way. It's official. The ANC, DA and IFP have formally signed an agreement to form a government of national unity. But what does it all mean? How the MK party overplayed its hand?
When it came to negotiations, the IFP particularly saying that they had a meeting with the MK party on Wednesday morning and they never ever showed up. Representatives from the IFP waited for 4 hours to have a conversation with MK party negotiators, but they did not show up.
Then the struggle for ministerial positions continues, and we can't help but wonder whether politicians have forgotten about the people. Later, a race against time as cases of mpox are on the rise. We also look at why Transnet is crying foul of a World Bank report. And why should cattle farmers paint eyes on their animals' backsides? We find out. Let's get into it. Welcome back to the show. You've been following the election trail for weeks now. Firstly, let's talk about the first sitting of our new parliament that happened this past Friday. It was a very long day, and we saw Agriculture Minister Toko Dadiza and the EFF's Veronica Mente nominated for National Speaker, and ultimately Dadiza was elected. And then we also had the DA's Annelien Lotriet elected Deputy Speaker, and then not surprisingly, Cyril Ramaphosa was re-elected as the president of South Africa. So were there any surprises for you considering the DA and the ANC basically came out just hours before the vote saying we have a deal?
Hi, Lazan. Thank you for having me again. So we definitely knew that a deal was in the works with the ANC and DA, along with the IFP. So the issue was around the timing and maybe just the fact that political parties felt like they didn't have enough time to do negotiations. And at this point, they had to decide if they would be joining the GNU just so that they're able to vote in a president in parliament, a speaker and a deputy speaker, right? Mm-hmm. Negotiations went on until the 11th hour. I mean, the DA only signed the GNU agreement on Friday morning, where Wednesday, the IFP had already indicated that they would be joining the GNU. And what was funny to me is that while announcing this, IFP leader Velinkosini Tlavisa mentioned that the IFP, DA and ANC are in this together, right? Without the DA formally announcing themselves.
Yes.
It was so interesting. And I felt as if like he was strong-arming the DA into this to say, it's too late. Now you have to do it. I've made an announcement on behalf of all the political parties. So it was quite interesting. But I think by Friday morning, I already knew that the DA would be going with ANC and IFP and that they had candidates and they will be voted in because immediately when the DA and ANC work together, they have 60%. Never mind what the IFP also brings to the table.
Yeah. But I want to know what happens next, because obviously the conversations are still happening. There's a lot to still iron out. So what happens now?
Right now, we know that the agreement only revolves around those three positions I mentioned earlier on, the president, the speaker and deputy speaker, right? Now it means they have to sit down and decide how positions will be shared. And from the document that was signed by GNU partners on Friday, it clearly says that the seats and positions should be proportional to the outcomes of the elections. So we'll still see a government and a legislature that's dominated by the ANC, followed by the DA and then the IFP. But certainly it will be a good opportunity for the DA because for the first time, they'll be able to probably have ministers, just depending on what kind of deal they strike. There would be one deal where potentially they are in charge of the legislatures and they play this watchdog and oversight role while the ANC still stays in the executive. Or this could be a mixture of all three parties working together. But we need to note that there are some very sensitive positions in the executive, one being the finance ministry or treasury.
Yeah.
I don't see the president removing Enoch Godongwana as the finance minister. I think he will be reappointed. And probably if later on he is removed from the position, it would require some smooth transition because this affects the markets and business and it's not an internal position. I believe also the position of the international relations minister is very important.
Yes.
We do know that former Minister Pandor is not an MP. However, the president does have the prerogative to probably appoint a couple of members who are outside of parliament to still be ministers. And I see him continuing with Pandor until such a time they can find someone else to fill her big shoes. I think she's also done exceptionally well in the last 5 years, especially looking at South Africa's case in the ICJ, yeah, BRICS, and just how we have started to grow our voice internationally again.
Now that the ANC, DA and IFP have officially joined forces to form a government of national unity, it's now a case of whose policies will make the final cut. GNU member parties will also have to tussle it out over ministerial positions. But of more concern to us is whether the people of South Africa even feature on the GNU's list of priorities.
And which other portfolios are the parties fighting for? Because we all know that the Treasury is at the top of the list, but then we also have mineral resources and energy, which is also a big one. And then, of course, the position of police minister.
I mean, the DA hasn't gone as far as speaking about positions, at least from my sourcing and understanding, no. The other political parties who were contemplating working with the ANC were the ones who had voiced outright their interest. So, for instance, the EFF said they want their deputy Floyd Shivambu to be the finance minister. We heard Gayton McKenzie from the Patriotic Alliance saying that if they were to get into the GNU, the expectation is to get the Home Affairs Ministry as well as the Police Ministry so they can crack the whip on certain issues. But at this point, when it comes to the DA, I wouldn't be sure because at this point, there's nothing in our constitution that indicates that it's possible to have two deputy presidents. So then it throws out the initial thinking that John Steenhuisen would be lobbying to be the deputy president. But still, at the same time, we need to remember the DA's relationship with the ANC deputy president, Paul Mashatile. It's been very turbulent, Lazan, to the point where they've also laid charges against him. And because of this, there might be a bit of a tussle from the DA to say, can we get the deputy president position? But we're not sure at this point which direction the DA will be taking and the IFP as well.
Now, someone mentioned something to me earlier this week, which I found quite interesting. And it's the fact that there's not a lot of talk about the fight over departments such as education, health and social development. And this person said that it kind of made them question where we as the people really sit in terms of the list of priorities when it comes to these conversations. Because let's be honest, those three departments are also crucial for the well-being and the human rights of South Africans. That just kind of made me think a little bit as well. It's like, I haven't heard anyone go like, I outright want the Department of Health or I want the Social Development Department. Because they've been preaching about refocusing their attention on the people and equality. But yet the conversations that we are hearing reflect that we don't even really feature in those conversations.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I think I was shocked from day one when results just came out. And instead of political parties talking about the way forward in terms of building a real government of national unity, they were having conversations already about ministries that they want. That was my first issue with all of this. And yes, you are right. We have a culture in our country where we see some ministries to be less important than others. Mm. The ministries that you have mentioned, Lizanne, are very important for our socioeconomic well-being. And I do believe that we need improvements in social development in departments like education, small business, and maybe because negotiations are going to the next level, we will probably hear more about the other ministries. I do expect the other political parties to be more eager to take on, I believe, the forgotten departments, and for them to turn that around and make them important.
Yes, and also you wrote about a document that outlines some of the principles of the government of national unity. I know a lot of emphasis was placed on the concept of professionalizing the public sector, you know, basing appointments on merit and being nonpartisan in its approach. And I was wondering, what does this mean for the ANC's cadre deployment policy? We've seen how the DA and the ANC have been fighting viciously over the cadre deployment policy specifically in the last couple of months. So I'm wondering, what does this whole GNU thing mean in terms of that fight?
Yeah, I believe that every political party does cadre deployment in some way or another. As a political party, when you employ people, you want people who are going to be loyal to the brand and loyal to your cause. But what's important about cadre deployment is that even if it is that you are deploying someone in your ranks, can they be qualified at least for the job? You know, I think that's the most important thing. Qualifications, experience, knowing that someone can actually do the job. I believe that the ANC, I mean, years back, I spoke to Senzo Mkunu at the time. He was the Minister of Public Service, and he spoke about how they were in the works of professionalizing the public sector. Now, I think maybe with the partnership between the ANC and DA, there could be a rapid move towards doing this exactly. I believe that there will be a big push from the DA to make sure that every position that's occupied is occupied by the right people. How quickly this can be done is another story altogether. Then how hard the DA will be pushing for this is also just another conversation altogether.
Now, before we wrap up the big politics talk for this episode, I just want to quickly talk about the MK party and specifically their position in KZN. On Friday, the IFP's Tami Ntuli was elected the premier of KZN, and he won by a mere 2 votes against the MK party's Phathi Sizwe Qhelisa. And I'm sure the MK party is not very happy about this. So I'm wondering, did the MK party perhaps lose sight of this very important coalition matter because of the infighting happening within MK party structures?
So I don't think there's infighting in the MK party, Lizanne. I do think that there's a fight between Jabulani Khumalo and Zuma. And everyone who is still in the MK party are there because of Zuma. I believe the party grew because of Zuma and there was interest in it because of Zuma. I don't believe if Jabulani Khumalo was the face of MKP, that they would be this far. I don't think they would have attracted this much media attention, this much support. But I do believe they overplayed their hand when it came to negotiations. The IFP particularly saying that they had a meeting with the MK party on Wednesday morning and they never ever showed up. Representatives from the IFP waited for 4 hours to have a conversation with MK party negotiators, but they did not show up. So I think they overplayed their hand. The MK party right now is in a very weird position because unlike this new EFF-led alliance on the opposition benches that has said that, you know, we are going to be your opposition, we're going to be your watchdog, going to make sure that the GNU works, and if there are any issues, we will sound the alarm, right? Mm-hmm. A very principled stance, in my opinion. EFF showing a little bit more maturity by saying, okay, fine, we are going to go to parliament. We'll allow proceedings to go ahead. We know we don't have the numbers, but because this is a democracy, we still have the freedom to nominate who we want. We will ensure that all processes are honored. We won't give the ANC, DA, and IFP the easy route where it's uncontested. I think that was more principled from the EFF and ATM and all the other parties compared to what the MK party did. I think the MK party needs to start thinking of itself as a political party, not just a movement in support of Zuma. If they're able to get out of that mindset, I believe that they could probably work towards garnering even more support in the upcoming local elections. But I think for now, they've lost the battle. There's no coming back now. All they need to do is get sworn in and comply and see how they can use National Assembly processes to keep the GNU to account and to use mechanisms to enhance themselves as a political party.
It's preventable and treatable if diagnosed early, but Mpox, formerly known as monkeypox, is spreading at a concerning rate globally. Detected in over 100 countries since the outbreak began in 2022, Mpox has now reached South African shores. But with no registered treatment for Mpox in the country, the Department of Health is in a race against time to acquire the necessary antiviral medication and vaccines to curb the spread.
Let's move on to health matters. And at the time of this recording, the Department of Health confirmed two deaths as a result of the viral infection Mpox. Meanwhile, another seven cases of Mpox have been confirmed in Gauteng and KZN. One of those they traced back to Cape Town. And, you know, for me, what makes the fatality so tragic is that the deaths were completely preventable. It's just purely we don't have the vaccines available. And it almost feels like a repeat of the COVID vaccines again, where you have countries across the world stockpiling life-saving vaccines, and we have to kind of beg to now get a few just to get ahead of this crisis. What's your take on the Mpox issue that's unfolding across the country at the moment?
From my perspective, it feels really like government needs to make sure that we get vaccines as soon as possible. The article that was written by my colleague Naledi Skakane mentions that the former health minister Joe Phahla was saying that the World Health Organization had already indicated that South Africa would get free vaccines to deal with Mpox. I'm hoping that can be done very quickly. My other thing is that there needs to be education, or we need to get as much information out around what Mpox is and who is the most at risk. I believe this Mpox outbreak has been overshadowed by what's been happening politically, but it's up to government to really make sure that they amplify the fact that we need to be careful. And I see they say that especially people who take chronic medicines, they need to make sure that they maintain that. They need to stay healthy because it really does attack people with weaker immune systems. So I believe that it's up to the health ministry right now to really step up and make sure that people are informed about what's happening.
Now, obviously, the Department of Health is still in discussions with the National Institute of Communicable Diseases, or the NICD, to determine which groups are most at risk to ensure they receive the vaccines first. According to the National Advisory Group for Immunization, these groups include, but are not limited to, sex workers, men who have sex with men, healthcare workers, and lab workers. So those will probably be the first people who will receive these vaccines when they do arrive. I believe that the department stated last week, Wednesday, that they expect these vaccines to arrive in the country, quote, in a matter of days. So hopefully within the next week, we'll have those vaccines hitting clinics and hospitals across the country. So yeah, hopefully those vaccines reach our shores very, very soon.
Marred by errors and factually incorrect. That's what Transnet has to say about the most recent World Bank Port Performance Index report. This after two of South Africa's major ports made it to the very bottom of the list. But Transnet says the data used in the report was not verified prior to publication, and that the embattled state-owned enterprise wasn't afforded the opportunity to respond to the findings. But the fact remains, our country's ports can certainly do much, much better.
Let's move on to Transnet. And Transnet is not very happy. And they made that very clear. So last week, the World Bank released its Port Performance Index report that looks at 405 major ports globally and how well they function. And not surprisingly, two South African ports, Cape Town and Pura in the Eastern Cape, were ranked 404th and 405th respectively. So we claim the two worst positions on that list. Carte Blanche has done numerous stories on the dismal state of ports. I know Daily Maverick has also written several in-depth features on the dire impact our failing ports have on the country's economy. What do you make of this report? And do you think it will serve as a wake-up call to government to now really just get to fixing our ports?
I believe the group executive, Michelle Phillips, really has so much work to do when it comes to Transnet. And yes, you are right, Lazan. There have been issues around our ports, the big backlog in Durban and Cape Town, and they say it's because of bad weather and equipment challenges. They also attribute some of the failures at our ports to the load shedding issue we have, as well as crime. But they heavily contest what has been said by the World Bank because they believe that the method which was used to compile the information around South African ports is incorrect.
Because Transnet claims that the report, which bases its findings on how long cargo essentially takes to move from the ships to the docks and onto the tracks or vice versa, is flawed and unverified. But to me, this just sounds like a government entity that's upset about the fact that it can no longer deny just how bad things have gotten.
That too, Lazan, it's also not a good look to be put on a list and to be shown to be doing so dismally. And I know that overall, it's a bad look for the country. Maybe that's why Transnet is fighting around these outcomes. But I do believe that they need to take responsibility at some point. Probably with the new government coming in, I'm excited to see and curious to see what will happen around this. But the issue around the ports needs to be fixed because it directly impacts our economy.
Keeping cattle is no easy task. Apart from environmental impacts such as drought and disease outbreaks, farmers also have to protect their livestock against various predators. This long-standing war between farmers and marauding jackals, lions, leopards, and caracals has led many cattle owners to take preemptive action, killing off predators in and around their farms before their animals fall prey. Now, a new study has found that a lick of paint could be the simplest solution to protecting both livestock and predators.
Now, onto agriculture, and this was a very strange story for me, but I loved it. I really did. Now, more specifically, this is a story about cattle with eyes on their backsides. Obviously, not literal eyes. I mean, that would be a scientific marvel. But researchers have found a very quirky solution to protecting livestock from predators, such as jackals and lions and so forth. And what they're doing is they're painting eyes on the cattle. Bums, and I just love this weird story. It's so strange.
I must say, I laughed so hard when I saw the the title of the story because I was like, what is Lazan into? I'm so also, I was like, why don't I know about this? Which animals have eyes on their butt? But then when I read the article and I saw the pictures, I felt it was so interesting. You know, science is interesting overall, but I really never saw this coming. I think it's such a simple but yet effective solution for especially farmers who have to deal with losing their livestock to predators. And it's always exciting when people come up with such interesting and new innovation.
And such simple innovations, because it doesn't require anything more than a little bit of paint, really. And yeah, you can check it out online. You'll see that they have these cows with these eyes painted on their rumps. And it just looks so strange. But the study, which took place over 4 years, found that 683 cows with eyes painted on their rumps were unharmed throughout this period.
Can I just say something? So when I was reading it, I just want to maybe explain to our listeners how it works. So apparently when you paint the eyes on their behinds, it looks as if they're looking at the prey. So it's hard for predators like lions, leopards, and tigers to actually ambush these animals because now they think that the animals can see them.
Yes.
It's so cool.
But what I also liked about this is that it's a win on both sides. So the farmers obviously win because their animals are better protected, but then the predators and wildlife as a whole also win because we know that farmers tend to almost take retaliatory action against predators. So, you know, if I can wipe out all jackal on my farm, then my animals won't get attacked at all. So this prevents that from happening. And instead, it just pushes for the whole concept of coexistence, which I've always been a big proponent of. So yeah, I love this. I really hope it gains traction and that we'll see more cows along the highway or in the villages with eyes on their backs. I love it.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
But Queenan, this has been an amazing chat. You still have a long road ahead of you.
Don't remind me. I'm just not ready. I am ready, but wow, can this end?
Well, you still really have a very long road ahead of you. Government and the country is trying to figure this whole GNU thing out. I can only imagine the surprises, the drama, the behind-the-scenes scandals happening, and I'm certain you're going to be on top of all of that. I look forward to reading all of your articles on it, and yeah, I wish you all the best of luck through it all.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening. Catch us again next week for another Whole Week Wrap. Until then, why not join the conversation on Twitter, Facebook, and everywhere else? We always love hearing from you.